thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to Monday Night Magic, episode 205. I calculated today if I got a nickel for every time I said that, I would have $10.
Well, you could almost buy a pack of Rise of the Eldrazi with that.
I could buy, about two, I guess, two and a half to at retail price.
Or you could get a tank of gas.
Just 1 gallon. It's going to be about 35 gallons for $35 per gallon of gas now with all the, because they're going to shut down all, offshore oil drilling now because apparently bad stuff happens. Who knew bad stuff could happen from oil drilling?
I mean, that to me, that sounds environmentally sound. My theory is we should just go back in time and kill dinosaurs before they eat other dinosaurs. That way there's more dead dinosaurs and we have more fuel.
Just and we want really big dinosaurs dying in convenient little pits so they can then be buried and turned into oil.
Oh, precisely. Yeah, it's totally logical when you sit there and think about it.
If anybody's new to listening to the show, this is Monday Night Magic, which is actually a show about Magic the Gathering. But usually we have to start off with a little bit of non-magic news.
Right. And we like to broadcast tonight in Jackavision, ladies and gentlemen. So turn your speakers up and the lights down low as me and Tom bring you all the relevant news you need.
Cover your eyes. So we will bust right into our magic news, and we will go through. We had a couple of big tournaments over this past weekend. So we will start, and again, I can't overemphasize the fairness I'm about to exude on this podcast. Can you sense the fairness just emanating from me right now, Jack?
It's like it's warm and radiating just off you like a big warm bear hug just waiting to happen.
If I was in D&D, I would be like neutral good right now. I'm just, that nice. Or even
and
it's not the
like
awful thing to do, I'm doing the right thing no matter what happens. I mean,
stab
the guy to save the kid, I'm going to stab the guy. It's just
totally,
the way I roll.
Totally. We'll burn down the orphanage to save them from the burning orphanage.
Exactly. Wait, I'm going to go first. Oh. So one of the big tournaments this past weekend was the 5K series. This was the TCGPlayer.com 5K series in Boston. It was a standard tournament, and we have the top 8 deck list.
Wait. Let's take a random guess. What won?
Yeah, I'm going to give you five guesses to see who got what deck archetype got first.
UI control.
You actually, that is the, as everybody's seen, that has become the new hot thing for standard, which got 2 and 3.
It's a monster. That thing makes me happy. No, but I know what deck it was. The deck we've all loved to hate, even though we play it, and just don't tell anybody. Jund.
So Jund placed first and 7th and 8th.
You know, it's getting, for me at least, where it's really boring to even look at standard tournament results because you know it's going to be up there.
Yeah. But I do want to say congratulations to Josh, for he's the person that won first with Jund. But like you said, that kind of the new standout now is blue-white control has become. It's kind of fun to see people going back to what I used to call, quote, the deck. Kind of
it's
classic blue-white control.
It's great, and I've always been a control player. Like, I mean, I like mid-range decks. I was a rock player for a while, and even Jund to me is kind of appealing, but nothing beats the classic archetype. I love just old-school mass removal, occasional spots, and big threats.
And, I mean, have you played at all any blue-white control, Jack? This is one that I've just started noticing. It plays a personal favorite card of mine, which is Marshall Coup, which is one I've always thought was pretty powerful and not played enough.
I looked at it a little bit when Patrick Chapin first really started making the rounds with it, and I like it. It plays exactly like you'd imagine a control deck playing. The new tap-out one that people are going around, which we're going to be covering later in the podcast, actually, I haven't had much experience with because, as everybody knows, I absolutely loathe standard and try to avoid it as much as possible. But, I've had some experience with it. I mean, it performs, and when it comes to standard, that's what you look for in a deck.
Let's see. And the other big tournament we had this weekend was the Star City Games Atlanta Legacy Open. I just want to get that, make sure I got that right. And this was in Atlanta, like I just said. It was over 200 competitors, and we want to say congratulations to David Mayer for winning first place. And he won first place playing Ad Nauseam Tendrils.
Ooh.
Which is pretty good. Now, let's take a look through. Nothing really too new from any of the new sets in this one. I always like to see if there's any cards making a big breakthrough. And unfortunately, Ad Nauseam Tendrils already has a pretty good set of tools, so there you go. And we also had Reanimator placing second, which was actually still playing Iona, which I thought was interesting.
It's a house. It's actually, I owned you. They just misprinted it.
I owned you. I like that.
You haven't had that one used on you yet?
I have not. Usually because I'm the one playing the Iona.
I actually had somebody drop the burning bacon comment on the Flaming Boar a couple of weeks back.
Oh, nice. So they brought it back for you.
I felt really good about that. I don't know if they said it because they didn't realize, like, you know, hey, I'm on Monday Night Magic. I like to disguise my voice when I go in public to keep myself safe from my raging fans, or, you know, the torch-wielding ones, at least. And it made me feel good. I was like, I did that. I made a difference in your day.
And then next thing is, if everybody realizes how much Magic News is, because Eric, who's kind of like the mother of MTGcast. Have you noticed that? He's like the mother hen. He keeps us in line. He makes sure we have stuff to talk about.
He doesn't get offended when I call him a demon.
He doesn't. If he was right here right now, he'd get really mad that I'm going to bring up the non-magic talk of the day. I have never seen this. I'm assuming most of you already have. This is the shake weight.
Hey, have you not worked your forearms enough with your bare hands on something long and hard? Try the shake weight.
If anybody has not yet witnessed the beauty that is the shake weight commercial, pause the podcast right now. Go Google shake weight or shake weights and watch. First, you have to watch the women's one, and then you have to watch the shake weight for men.
Make sure your Google settings are on advanced, though. That way you don't come up with some other kind of shake weights there.
Yes. So basically, the entire premise of this thing is that it looks like a barbell, or kind of like a typical dumbbell, except it can vibrate back and forth. So you kind of shake it back and forth, and supposedly the vibrations, 240 times a minute, will work every muscle in your body. But if you're a normal human being and you see this, it looks like they're masturbating somebody. There is no other way to perceive what they're doing.
They're making mashed potatoes, Tom, or they're operating a jackhammer, or they're sliding down a fireman's pole. Let's not do that one.
And then if you watch the shake weight for men, you can't help but notice that the one guy, he's like incredibly ripped and buff, that he does it incredibly quickly and then grunts at the end of it. That is even more suggestive than any of the ones in the shake weight for women ad. This is an actual product. Saturday Night Live did a very good spoof where they had a commercial for a DVD of the shake weight commercial so guys could watch it when their wives weren't home and their kids were out of the room. So you'd have to like, keep trying to run in and catch the ad. You could just kind of watch it when you needed to and then to do your business.
The only one worse than that is, have you seen the TV hat yet?
Yes. Is that like it has, like, it has the bill on that used to be on those comedy hats that said, I bet mine's longer than yours, but has like a little curtain.
Exactly. Because, like, you know, what says I want to be an isolated loner better than having your MP3 player directly in front of your eyes with blinders beside you? So you don't see
anybody. I imagine being on the bus, everybody just like crowding to get as far away from you as possible.
Oh, it's a Centurion.
Well, Eric, wherever you are, I know you're camping right now. You probably just had this little chill because we got way off topic, so I'm bringing it back. I'm channeling Eric and bringing it back.
Oh, yeah.
So, Eric, we also put on the Magic Online Rise of the Eldrazi pre-release events. These are starting, these are going to be the pre-release Swiss sealed events, flights starting Friday, May 7th at 10 in the morning, PDT, 12 match points will get you 10 booster packs. It basically goes 10, 4, 1. For that, that's the other big one. Additional prizes. All players who participate in the pre-release will be getting a copy of the pre-release Emrakul, the Aeon's Torrent, which I thought was pretty nice.
Yeah, that's a pretty hot mythic.
And if you end with 9 or more match points, you actually get a premium foil one.
Ooh.
So you can end up with 2 of these if you do well.
Now, something I've always wondered about, because I don't really play any MTGO because I'm a cheap bastard and use Magic Workstation, if you get a complete set and one of your cards is the promo card, like for a set getting released, do you get the promo card as well when you try to cash in and get those cards?
That is an excellent question that I don't know the answer to.
Tom, you disappoint me.
This is the listeners, the handful of you that know this question, I know you're yelling at your speakers or phonograph, whatever you're listening to us through.
They're just mad because I'm already on the podcast.
Yeah, they're already typing up. They already have the template open for their hate mail. They just have to put Jack or Tom. They have to delete the other name and then fill in the stars.
Yeah.
And the other, if you apparently missed the pre-release events on MTGO, you can hit the release events. They're going to have booster draft queue, 16-player Swiss, 64-player top 8 premier drafts, top 8 sealed, Swiss sealed, and release events, and championship events, whatever you can humanly want. So you're winning packs. Additional prizes, again, is going to be an Echo Mage Avatar. Does anybody care about avatars, really? The personal plan is if you get 9 match points, you get a Transcendent Avatar. I think they could have picked the one card from the set that doesn't have the word Avatar in the name.
I don't know. Like, I don't really know much about the avatars, to be honest. I mean, do they serve any real purpose other than slightly affecting the game? I mean, Momir Vig was the only one I ever saw people go crazy over.
And I didn't know if when they use the word avatars, if that's the things that you can use for that format, or if this is just your little picture when you're playing a game.
Yeah, like, because that would be kind of lame.
So if people are playing more avatars, let us know, because Jack and I are not big MTGO fans. Or Marcel, when he's back on next week, he can share with us.
We feign our own ignorance in this one, folks. Please, please write into us about this.
He had a fun, fun weekend, therefore he could not join us.
He was with the ladies in Vegas, Lady Luck and all the other ones.
Apparently he had a rough weekend, so he needed to recover just a little bit. And we also have some news. This is from the Starkington Post. And I also wanted to say I talked with Bill. Monday Night Magic will be showing up on the Starkington Post now as well.
Woo!
There you go. Because we started having the StarkingtonPost.com podcast on. I'm like, do you want Monday Night Magic? He's like, I was just emailing you. So, yes.
That's great minds think alike right there. And Bill Stork is certainly a great mind.
So, basically, MTG Fanatic, they're planning to bring, they say, the best independent event system out there. So, what they're doing is they're introducing a Fanatic event organizer for each district. This way they can, I guess, better manage and produce and hold events and just improve the quality of those events. They say that, as they currently stand, I haven't verified this, they have the greatest amount of cash events than anyone in the world. I haven't verified to know if that's true or not. Hmm. So they're basically calling out for players that have lots of experience planning and executing events. Contact them, and you may have the opportunity to be this head of your district when it comes to arranging events. You'll have to maintain your district, arrange venues, creating core stores, maintaining premier stores, and promoting the war card system. And the war card system itself, I am not very familiar with, to be honest.
This is the first time I've ever heard about it. So
if anybody from mtgenetic.com, you know, is working there or is part of the system, give us an email. We can happily talk more about this to make sure people know about it and how to apply to this.
Because if there's one thing we love doing on Monday Night Magic, it's talking at great lengths with noise just coming out of our mouths, right, Tom?
Exactly. Our job is to bring you the news, what you decide to do with it. There you go.
Yeah.
So basically, if you think you're going to be a good candidate, you can give them an email, and the email is jacob.mckelvy@mtgfanatic.com. And they actually have a link to two different brochures here, which are pretty bank. So they basically talk about the war card, which is actually this promotion. So I can tell you about it right now as this huge image loads. So the war card system is designed to provide you, the player, with rewards for your participation in MTGFanatic.com sponsored events. For each event you attend, you get experience points. That's kind of cool. Instead of calling it, I don't know, whatever type of points, just call it experience.
Tom, they're using the level up system too!
They are. And this, because everybody, we know the addiction of like little tiny rewards over short periods of time. Works for World of Warcraft. It works for the GiantBomb.com website. It's going to work for Warcard. So as you play in events, you earn experience points. The better you perform, the more experience points you get. As you get more experience points, you achieve new levels and unlock additional rewards. So levels, you get it? You will need to carry your Warcard trademark with you for quick registration at events and to collect rewards for your Warcard system. And they list the different rewards we have. We have levels 1 through 7, and basically they range from getting discounts, getting buys, kind of more discounts, championship invites. Really is kind of what these release, and they also have some different, potentially, trophies and shirts and whatnot. And basically the experience points range from Friday Night Magic, where they go Friday Night Skirmishes, 1 to 3 points. Their 1 to 2Ks ranges from 1 to 30 points. And their 5Ks, which are 3 per year in a district, range from anywhere from 5 experience points to 70 points for the champion. And to give you the levels, to get to level 7, which is their Arch Magi level, that's 300 experience points. That'd be playing in a lot of events or doing really well in a bunch of events.
That's at least a little bit more forgiving than, say, Diablo 2.
Yes, where you have to play forever. And then they have the kind of a yearly championship where the Magi, which I assume are these level 7 people, are pitted against each other to battle for a full contract with MTGFanatic.com. The winner will earn a free ride to Worlds, all Pro Tour events, and 4 domestic DCI-sanctioned events.
Good grief.
So basically, I guess they're basically paying you to pimp their shirt. I mean, really.
They have to. So like maybe they're hoping that the Magi level is really hard to earn and only like beautiful, pretty people get it, maybe?
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like only one person will win this kind of Magi fight-off, so they only have one person winning this kind of huge prize.
You know, I think we should use a similar system, but we should take beautiful female applicants to pimp our own show, Tom.
We could. I'm always willing. I actually had a, when we go through listener emails, I got some emails from a very cool female listener in Canada who filled me in on some of the off magic topics we discussed last week. So if anybody really wants to get going on this war card system, you just got to go to mtgfanatic.com. They have something called My Battle Book. I think I've logged into this. It's one, also another way to find local players. And that's another way just to track your points. So, I mean, it's just amazing how we've seen this explosion of cash events from all these different venues, usually kind of online magic card stores. It's wild.
It's awesome because it gives you players different places to play other than just official events, but it also makes great business sense because they're competing with one another in essence. I mean, if your event is bigger, badder, and has a better payout, which one do you think people are going to go to?
And I mean, even though I'm not a tourney player, I mean, Jack, you play in more stuff than I do. In my mind, it can't hurt the game to have more tournaments with, I guess, more cash attracting more players.
It encourages people to play. There's nothing bad about that at all whatsoever.
So I guess kudos to MTG Fanatic joining Star City Games and TCG Player and all Midwest Master Series, all these other big cash tournaments that we're having now. I wonder if anybody's crazy out there has probably done this, or if you put all these tournaments on a Google Calendar, like, what would it look like? Like, how many tournaments in a year are there right now?
Insomnia for at least 6 months or so.
Yeah, so if you really want to get into it, there you go. It's like those, like, I do geocaching, you have those crazy geocachers that have, like, 8,000 finds. Like, I feel like I do geocaching a lot, and I have about 400.
Now, geocaching, do you mean, like, just making a point on a map or going to a location and finding something?
Oh, this is geocaching the game/sport. If you haven't heard about this, it's geocaching.com. It's a sport where people have hidden, they call them caches, which are little hidden buckets or ammo containers. It's like a little treasure box that they hide. Then they post a GPS coordinate on the website. I looked it up, then I go find their little treasure box.
Ah, I've heard about that. But sometimes it goes under a different veil of urban exploration. You've probably heard about that.
If it's called urban exploration, I have not.
Urban exploration is a little bit different in that
it's
you're
like where
usually
you're trying to find out where to buy crack or
which alley do I go into. No, that would be like
a
suburban exploration in my case. Urban exploration is you're usually breaking into like a band. Well, breaking into is a bit of a wrong word. You're entering
abandoned buildings. We get into abandoned buildings.
Right. I was trying to find the right way to phrase that. And sometimes it's really a lot of fun. I've been into a couple of mills around here and a few abandoned sewers, and it's nice. You just got to bring a nice respirator with you, obviously.
This is something where, for people, if you grew up in more of a small town area, you kind of do this because there's nothing else to do. But it's actually interesting. I've seen people posting pictures from like abandoned schools and things, and it looks like pictures from like a post-apocalyptic movie.
Rotting
desks and like trash all around. You're just like, I could film a movie in here like in 2 days and be cool.
This guy had broken into entered unlawfully a abandoned mental institution, and there was actually a tree growing through the wall.
That is awesome. That's like from BioShock almost. Does that kind of
just almost, yeah.
And kind of keeping the creepiness going, we officially have the artist for Pro Tour San Juan. The reason I bring up creepy is the first one, he's actually a very interesting guy, is John Avon. I mean, he has done over 168 cards. He is most well known for his lands. He's the land guy. And he is crazy. This is when Dom was still on running the podcast. He actually got together with this guy, and he was apparently pretty nuts, and he like drew on sugar packets, and apparently they just got lambastedly drunk, I guess, when they got together. Apparently he was a very interesting man. I would love to meet him at some point. And the other artist that has become incredibly popular due to the Planeswalkers is Aleksei Bricklot. Or Aleksei?
Did he draw Garruk?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that I recognized that name.
So he's on quite a few of the Planeswalkers. Therefore, when he was at one of the worlds I went to, he had a huge line just because of the popularity of Planeswalkers. Let's see. Next, we were talking about the Duels of the Planeswalkers, the paper decks. We now actually have the packaging and the list for one of the physical Duels of the Planeswalker decks. These are going to be in stores June 4th. The one we have to actually go through is Teeth of the Predator. This is the Garruk Wildspeaker deck.
So it's going to involve like a lot of camouflage and invisibility and lasers, right, Tom?
Yes. And if you... Yeah, because Predator. And we have to have the former mayor, governor of Minnesota, Jesse the Body Ventura, who was in that movie. And as I predicted, how many Planeswalkers are in this deck when you look at the deck list there, Jack?
Hold on, I'm bringing it up right now, and we have zero.
Not
a one. Do we have any in here that have are anything in here of any interest? Troll aesthetic, hey, that's not
troll
bad.
Aesthetic, I mean, wall of wood. Hammers are kind of nice.
Troll hammer, Tom. Troll hammer.
Verdant force. Yeah, but no, I'm sorry. I still think it was a mistake not to have a planeswalker in these.
Yeah, this
it
is.
It shows them
this
on
is
the
very disappointing.
Package. I'm just afraid people are going to get this and be upset.
Yeah, this is actually really disappointing, I must say. I mean, I don't know. I guess we got spoiled on the dual decks, giving us such good cards, but this is kind of a letdown.
And if you want to keep an eye out, they'll be. This actually came out on April 27th. They're going to be releasing one deck a week for the next. The other four will be one per week for the next 4 weeks in the Magic group, which is the community page for Magic the Gathering. So if you want to see other decks that don't deal or feature Planeswalkers of any sort, you can check those out. Basically, once I saw this, it really took away my interest.
We have Trained Armadon.
At least there's 60-card decks. I will give that where if I'm playing with my friends that know to play Magic but they don't actively collect cards anymore, I can at least get these and we can just play out of the box with them.
If you're playing casually, yeah, but I was about to say one advantage that these have over the starter decks is they are 60 cards. However, it's 60 cards that aren't exactly standard, so that might mean to lead to more confusion on a new player's part.
Yeah, no, this would be solely for the kind of my friend group that plays casually, or if they come over, like, you want to play some match, you're like, sure, they have no idea what standard is or anything like that, but
yeah,
they know the basic rules.
Oh, my. Let's see if there is anything in here. Overrun?
We got Overrun, we got Malamo, who's at least kind of cool. You know,
he looks like a giant weed.
He's kind of creepy. Like, he looks like a big insect mated with a leaf. It's like if a big stick insect became a legendary creature, that's what he would be.
Oh, you need to look at more bugs, mister. There's a lot of bugs that look like that.
I guess, I'm sorry, Jack, I'm not up to my, is it entomology? Is that the study of bugs?
Yeah, it is. Actually, I was moving some boards the other week, and I saw what I thought was a brown maple leaf, and then it started moving. That was creepy.
Oh, awesome. I was going to say, I think you're going to go with the brown recluse, which is the spider that we have in Minnesota that can kill people. It's like
no, we have those here, too.
Oh,
a friend of mine actually got bit by one, and he kept scratching it. And I was like, well, dude, what happened? He's like, oh, I just got bit by a spider. I was like, oh.
A burger.
And after a while, like, it kept getting bigger and bigger, and then I noticed he wasn't at school one day, and he came back the next day, was still scratching it, and had a giant bandage over it. And I was like, dude, what happened?
Depending on where the bite was, that could actually be a good thing. Ooh. If it just kept getting bigger and bigger and required you to scratch it all the time. Just saying.
I lost 20 pounds off my brown recluse bite.
It's really good.
What can the shake weight do for you?
All right, so we had to get ourselves into the gutter to talk about this next news item. I made it through about half of this. So this
Is this that
this
thing?
Is simply titled The Magic Muppet Video. And as the description from Bill Stark is, what do pancakes, F&M, the Muppets, and Magic have in common? Until this ad came out, jack shit.
Okay, you know what? No, Tom, I have to step in here, and I'm going to speak directly to the Wizards advertising department, okay? So just let me rant. Okay, guys, it's me, Jack, your old buddy. I've been playing your game for probably 10 years now. Do you hate us? Do you hate the player base? Is that what this is about? Because you're already making a movie, and Marlon Wayans is inadvertently going to be in it somehow, some way, and now you're doing this to us.
So
why?
So what we're talking about, visit the link in the show notes. It's worth watching. It's almost 6 minutes long, which is clearly too long for an ad. But it is a Magic video promoting Friday Night Magic, but it stars a Muppet-like character. But it's kind of deformed. Its eyes don't really meet in the same plane. It looks kind of shabbily done. If anybody saw the David Chappelle show where he did the Muppet version of the STD talk, that's what this reminds me of. And also, they even made it a really creepy little Planeswalker t-shirt for it to wear. Because, you know, it's weird to see a naked Muppet.
Well, what I was wondering is this like a official, you know, Henson Estate kind of production, or is it not? Because as some of you will undoubtedly notice within the first 30 seconds of this commercial, the Muppet curses several times.
I think it's a Muppet-like character. I don't think this is, and I don't recognize this character as being an official Muppet. I think it just happens to be a puppet-like contraption that looks Muppet-like because it's furry.
Well, then it's probably only a matter of time before Henson pulls up like the Kirby Estate and just smacks the crap out of Wizards, but we'll just wait and let the legal papers fly.
Yeah, so check it out. Basically, what this video shows is if you're too stupid to figure out how to go to an F&M, just to walk you through the process of being like, You know, A, you got to start with, I play Magic. B, apparently you have to have a buddy that's a Muppet. C is that you need to know where the store is, therefore you must call on an ancient cordless phone to figure this out.
And your friends also have to be totally inept and put food in their backpack on a plate that wobbles around randomly.
Yes. And they eventually get to the store and yada, yada, yada. Watch the video. It's bizarre. I'm assuming they just threw this out there to kind of get people's feedback. I'm just not sure who they are targeting for the audience with this
one. Yeah, because, like, the Muppet's kind of loud and obnoxious and makes you not want to watch it. So as an average player, why would I have any indication to, like, continue with this ad campaign?
And you said the magic word, you're already a player. So
yeah.
I'm not sure if this is I'm assuming it's targeting the casual player that's never tried an FNM, because if you're already playing an FNMs, you don't care. You're already going.
Well, it's also, and I'm just going to be honest, it's kind of, in a weird way, degrading to players, because you have this little Muppet who's really obnoxious and, like, just annoying as crap and curses the entire time. And, I mean, while that does resemble quite a lot of players, I do know, I'm not taking away from that. I don't really like that.
It's a small, hairy person just swearing at you. I'm like, that's a lot like when I go play FN. Never mind.
Because usually I'm that small, hairy person.
Either brown or blonde, but not purple.
But, no, like, in a weird sort of way, that's almost like they're stereotyping their own fan base. So, I don't know. There's a lot of things that just strike me as very strange and not necessary about this ad.
That's awesome. Change of topic here is Holly, my wife, to show me. They actually make graham crackers that are Scooby snacks. That is awesome.
Yay.
I'm assuming there's no illicit substances in those graham crackers, right?
Oh. Come on, Scooby, you just want another snack,
yeah,
don't you?
There's also an alcoholic beverage mix that's called a Scooby snack. It's an interesting. We're having a Scooby themed party this weekend, so.
So, like, they're actively trying to break everybody's childhood now in manufacturing, apparently.
So yeah, Wizards. You know, if anybody that's related to this ad, I would just be curious to hear kind of who you're aiming for with this, where this would be showing up. It's too long to be on TV. So I'm assuming this is going to be on some sort of either viral ad on YouTube or showing up on websites. I'm just curious where this would be and who you want to be watching this.
Why did you do this? That's all I want to know.
And who made that little shirt? Because that is kind of cool. Like, they had it. And it's, like, tight. It's like Vin Diesel wearing a t-shirt. That's how tight the shirt is on the Muppet.
Maybe the Muppet's really ripped under that there, Tom.
She's just busted out of that thing. All right. Enough of the Muppets. Next thing that we have on the show is, God, Eric puts so much stuff on this, it's absolutely insane.
That's why we miss him when he's not here.
I know, he's out where he's camping. So the next thing is Star City Games has a new contest for those that enjoy parodies and also magic art. So this is the rise of the Laldrazi. You get it? Laldrazi? So as they say, there's nothing funnier than ancient, insatiable forces of destruction, which are the Eldrazi. So all you have to do to participate is to create a funny graphic using a card or artwork from Rise of the Eldrazi and an entertaining caption. And then you have to post the image to their Facebook page. And they have an example of one of the Eldrazi kind of come over the hill and says, oh, hi, guys. Like, you know, the cheeseburger lolcat sort of thing.
Yeah, it's so witty and funny and original, I must say.
And they have the promotional, kind of the fake promotional poster of Emrah Cool when you absolutely, positively have to win the game right now. First prize is a free one-year subscription to the premium content on Star City Games or a free entry into an open series event. Two runners-up will get a free one-month subscription to the premium content. Everything is due on Facebook by Wednesday, May 5th at noon EST, and the winners will be announced the next day. So, there you go. It's free to enter if you want to give it a try.
And it's not like there isn't a ton of demotivational posters on the internet anyway, so let's just add to the pile.
Let's just keep going with it.
I have to admit, with Emrakul, the angle I would have took was more of a that caught advantage, yo.
Yeah, what do you got with that?
Yeah.
Oh, what do we got? Oh, Eric, I'm getting tired already. So
it's like just talking is requiring more oxygen to cover what he's picked for us. Oh,
so barely, this was an article on Star City Games from Max McCall. He was talking about the blue-white control in Vengevine. But he just has, if you want to read to the end, I won't summarize it. But he has some really good points to talk about mythics in general. And also, Aaron Forsyth mentions this article in his Twitter feed about saying this had some very valid points about mythics. Because if you follow Aaron Forsyth's Twitter feed, he clearly gets a lot of feedback from people about mythics. And it sounds like it's largely negative. Usually people complain, like, why is X not mythic and why is Y a mythic? And I can only imagine.
I actually read this earlier in the week. This is a great article.
And it's also, it's a non-premium article, so everybody can go check this out, which I think is very nice.
Which is why we are plugging it so hard right now, Terry.
Yes. we plug everything hard, Jack and I. This is the way we roll.
Yeah, we've got mad skills in Magic and out of Magic.
Let's see, we have, there's a reminder from Aaron Sweeter feed that the intro packs for M11 will be 60 cards, which again, I think is an important thing. I was frustrated by the old ones being 40 cards, so they're back to 60, which I think is the right thing to do.
Right.
Because it can't be much more cost to give me, you know, a handful of more lands and just some random okay commons in that deck.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I mean, honestly, it doesn't matter if it's a Baneslayer Angel or an Ideas Unbound. It only costs a penny or so to print, right?
Exactly. I mean, you might as well go through it. And we also wanted to give a mention to In Contention. They're another podcast that's frequently showing up on MTGCast. They also have a lot of discussion on Mythics. This is by Sam Stoddart. So that'll be a link in the show notes if you want to hear more. Obviously, it's a topic that's been beaten to death over and over again, but it's something we're continue to be faced with, and they definitely seem to be changing their view on Mythics and what we are going to be expecting from Mythics in the future. It'll be interesting to see what happens at M11, because that's where I think where people get really up in arms if they feel like their Mythics are super broken or too powerful or too plain or whatever you'll complain about with these.
Well, I'm wondering if they're going to either reprint a card like or reprint Baneslayer Angels, something at that power level is a mythic that is obviously a very competitive card. Do you think they'll do that again, Tom? Do you think like they'll view that as a viable option? Because obviously, I mean, like they, and we won't go too into this discussion because as you just said, like we've beaten this to death already. Obviously, Wizards wants to sell packs, and it's a lot like the U-White decklist article was covering. They want to sell packs, but they're not price gouging people, obviously, because you know it's really supply and demand that drives the price of Baneslayer Angel or Jace or anything like that. I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you think Wizards will consider these gripes and not reprint something like that?
It's for reprinting Mythics, like in future base sets.
Yeah. That's a hard question to answer, isn't it?
I would have to say my answer would be I think they're going to listen, but I would say I would still expect to see something potentially the level of Baneslayer in M11 because they've definitely pointed out they want to have these sets be more frequently coming out and more relevant, which I think would mean to have more exciting cards. We're going to have new cards, but I would also guess they're going to have Mythics being reprinted that are exciting that are going to make people actually want to buy packs.
Well, actually, what I interpret from that is they're going to print cards that will host decks that are too dominant at the time as well.
Oh, in the new base sets?
Yeah, kind of like a Great Sable Stag. Think about it.
Back just to kind of keep it around for a little while longer?
Right, kind of like when M10 was first printed, Fairies was so dominant, and that would just almost put the final nail in the coffin right there.
I guess I hadn't thought about it as being kind of a hoser to clean things up, but now that it comes out more frequently, they theoretically kind of can, quote, patch up the format a little bit.
It's the injection in the arm that they can put in when they see where the format's going.
Yeah, it's tough because I know they designed these sets so far ahead. And that's the other thing that would make me say it might be tougher to do that because theoretically these sets have been in development for a long time.
Well, think about it like this, though. They didn't really print any other cards in M10 that would host something like Fairies. They just printed Great Sable Stag. So you make one card that kind of fixes that deck and you just don't worry about it. So and if the deck's around, you've got it taken care of. If it's not, you have one great card.
So do you feel like they may have put that card in the set later than maybe the normal development process?
I don't want to say anything like that because that's baseless speculation. We have no way of measuring it.
Seems like it was almost in response to that.
I certainly think that they're paying far more attention to the competitive formats because Wizards has been proactively trying to get new players over the last couple of years. And I think what they're trying to do is they're looking more at Standard, basically, because that's the most popular competitive format. Well, the most frequently played competitive format. Let me rephrase that. And, you know, as a new player, if you go to that and you get your butt kicked by something like Fairies, you're not going to feel good about it. So I think they're trying to make that format a little bit healthier, and I can already feel like the hate mail I'm going to get over Cascade and Jund and everything else, so that more people will find Standard more approachable. And I think they're taking that kind of thought process over to the core set.
Okay. So it'd be interesting. I would love to. I know they can't give us details, but we just need to hear, have they ever made late changes to a set due to what the current Standard format was?
Or potentially any of you moles in the company that want to email us, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, because we're just, as mostly casual players, we have certain lists. I think people are just curious. So it really seems like Magic itself, you know, we get the end product. But it's almost like your TV or like a CPAP machine where it's a black box. You don't know what's going on inside of it that's spitting out these gold nuggets at you.
Right.
And I think people would only be more interested to learn more about that process.
Oh, I love reading about the design process personally, but there's, you know, they just don't want to open up enough about it. But hey, that's wizards, right? That's how they do things. And as long as they make good product, I don't care.
Yeah, they pretty much do. I mean, they kind of have you by the short hairs. I mean, you're kind of betrothed to them. Like, they're the only ones that give you magic cards, so ergo, you will buy them.
Right.
Because, you know, every other game that's come out basically has not been able to supplant them. They're kind of like...
Oh, wow! Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's still alive and popular, but it's no way... I would say the closest to me would actually be Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, when I go to stores, it's either Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh! That I'm seeing being sold.
I still see a lot of people playing the Spoils, and also another major, big game I see people playing, and this is usually if they can't afford to play Magic, they inadvertently go to this for some reason. Warhammer 40K, the miniature game.
Like the actual metal ones, or do they have like a plastic WizKids version?
No, they have the actual metal ones, and they've put like a lot of time into painting them. If it's not Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh!, they play Warhammer.
That's scary when you can officially say that something like Magic is cheaper or more expensive to play than Warhammer 40K.
Yeah.
That's a scary thing to say. Last but not least, we have a nice little survey about... Oh, Jack, I'm dying.
No, Tom! No, take me instead. I'm not as strong.
Wow, I just got struck by something.
That was me bringing you back from the edge right there. How's it feel?
Wow, yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw the other side there for a second. Saw the tunnel.
What was it like?
Wow, it was amazing. It was full of Mr. Pibb and Twinkies.
Did they have a good price date even over there?
It was cherry Mr. Pibb. It was amazing.
And cherry Twinkies. Ooh.
Oh, cherry Twinkies. Okay, I think, I'm not even sure. Apparently I'm not handling my own saliva today. Man, that's a problem. So we had this, Eric just wanted to let us know about a little survey on a website I had not heard of until today. This is stillhadallthese.com. It's a Magic Strategy Reports and Shenanigans blog. But there's this very nice informal survey about national qualifiers. He just wanted to have people say that we've heard that they're going to be replacing regionals, replacing them with this national qualifiers program in the U.S. and Canada. And Bill Stark actually did an interview with Scott Larrabee, who does the organized play, about these questions. And he just wanted to say, fill out this form. Just want to know if you're planning to go to national qualifiers to fill out this form. He just kind of wants to use this to aggregate a little bit of information as asking, are you going to nationals? Are you going to one outside of your state? How far are you willing to travel and why and things like that? It's not going to be used for any commercial reasons. I don't know much about this website, but it looks totally legit. Is to fill it out just so Wizards can get more feedback about this as potentially positive or negative if people don't like this change. Because we do know they listen. We're seeing changes to products. Introducts are going back to 60 cards. They do listen to feedback from players.
Well, because without us, they wouldn't need.
Yeah, because they want to and they have to, but you do know they listen, so it's worthwhile to give them back your feedback.
Right. As a Mr. Hughes once famously said, you don't work for us. How did he phrase this? I don't work for you. You work for us.
Y'all work for P. Diddy. That's how he said. God. David Chappelle, when he would make fun of P. Diddy, was usually magical.
I so badly miss his show.
All right. Jack, is there anything else on the Magic news that Eric may have missed? And the answer is no.
No, I think Eric actually covered possibly everything that was going on this week and next week.
Yeah, he somehow looks through time. He's been watching the Fringe, and he's got the Faraday cage around his body. He's traveling into the future to get magic news.
That's his demon magical powers, Tom.
It's the beard.
Yeah, it's a demonic beard that allows him to control the future like a DeLorean.
we actually talked about car movies this weekend. That was one of them, Back to the Future.
And what's sad is the flux capacitor that's mentioned in every electronic, there's actually a flux capacitor. So at some point in the movie, folks, you have to realize they're just using big words because they know you won't recognize them.
Oh, catalytic converter. Wow, that does make the DeLorean go through time. And it doesn't make my exhaust stick. That's the other thing that does good. So we'll go into why I almost wanted to title the name of this podcast, Call Me Email, because we had a boatload of emails. I could not fit all of them on. We're going to save some for next week. Because once I turn it up to like 15 to 20, I just got to say, good ones, I got to cut it off a little bit.
I've been getting some cool email lately.
So we will run through these fast. I want to try to give everybody a shout-out that we can. We'd love to get emails. It's pitimp, P-I-T-I-M-P, at mtgcast.com. Jack, where should they email you?
All right, ladies and the few gentlemen that call me. You can hit me up at jack@mtgcast.com, or if you're feeling especially daring or just want to randomly know something about me, you can catch me at formspring.me/jackfromnc, all one word, lowercase. Now, I will say this. While Formspring allows you to ask me questions anonymously, and I will answer almost any question, please avoid questions about my sex life. I've gotten too many of those already, and it's kind of annoying, so, yeah.
Really?
Let's not talk about it.
Like, anything involving water weenies?
Just, like, where I keep my shake weight when it's not...
Yeah, because we started talking about water weenies after watching the shake weight commercial. It's kind of just a natural progression of that discussion.
What is a water weenie?
You ever seen a water weenie?
We have listener... Tom, we have listener emails. We have to stay on topic.
No, you've asked the question. Water weenie, this is nothing bad or sick. We used to get these at, like, Chuck E. Cheese. It kind of looked like a small little sort of hot dog shaped. It was like a tube filled with water with like a hole in the middle. So if you squished one end, it would just sort of roll out the other side. So you could kind of like indefinitely squeeze it.
Oh, I know what those are.
Water
yeah.
snakes, I think they may have been called. But we
those
call water
those had a lot of alternative uses.
Yeah, especially that's what you're saying. Like if you were to warm up in a microwave, or there's lots of uses for that.
Not that we advocate that kind of behavior on MTGcast. No.
Potentially harmful. Who knows what's in a water weenie? It's probably horrific. You know,
anthrax and like cyanide.
So emails, we have Nicole, this is the female listener from Canada that wrote in, who not only agrees that Patrick Stewart is attractive, yes, was not offended by my talk of the Deathless Angel, bonus number two, and says she is a casual player that mostly pays attention to the non-magic discussion of our show.
And there's been plenty of that this week.
And I just said Eric's heart just stopped. That's what I said on this. And her question to the listeners is, if there were to be a car manufacturer and they were to make Planeswalkers-themed vehicles... Pick a planeswalker and what kind of car and email it, or what it would look like.
That's actually, that's almost a brilliant idea for our next contest,
I was going to open up for people to send me ideas for our next contest, but I need more ideas, because I'm kind of tapped out.
Haha, fun.
Oh, yeah, but save that one.
Yeah, I tap it harder than Termagoy from the McCallumbat phase.
I saw that in your little, is it your Skype thing that says tap?
Yeah, the mood, I guess that would be.
I guess I didn't realize that what sexual Tarmogoyf for both male and female. If a Tarmogoyf was only one gender, there's like a Tarmogoyf and a Manogoyf. Yeah, I didn't know if there's like different genders of these things.
Well, Tom, as the Muppet video shows, there's some things we're just better off not knowing. And please don't send me any Rule 34 like Tarmogoyf pics, please, folks. Let's stop it right there.
Mike emails in a correction. We were talking about Plane Chase last week. Kind of complained that we felt like it hadn't been supported. And Mike A says, actually, they have been supporting it with we've had four new Planes cards in 7 months, which is better than the one in 3 months that we quoted as being supporting. We had Tazim with Zendikar, Celestine Reef, Luvion, we had Horizon Bows, and we had Mirrored Depths. So, I stand corrected. We have had at least and they're pretty cheap on eBay. I mean, we're talking a couple bucks. Pat from Maryland had a story at his Rise of the Eldrazi pre-release. Says they were talking about our discussion about race and magic and artists using themselves as models. And they were kind of joking that they wanted to get some copies of Vampire Hexmage signed by the artist. And he wanted to say that the vampire featured in that art was really attractive, how hot she was. But he decided just to say, asking the artist who the model was. And the male artist said, hey, I used myself as a model. So basically he saved himself for this person who I'm assuming is heterosexual is saying, I find this woman really hot that's apparently modeled after a guy.
That's kind of frightful.
Well, let's see, we have a spider demon just recommends the Critter series of movies for B-horror, which I will probably be bringing up in the future. Parth, who's actually a graduating medical student, he sent me in a link to a magic-like collectible card game developed by physicians for teaching antibiotics and infection. And it's actually the art on this. I'll have a link in the show notes. It actually looks pretty good. I mean, it's art that's on the level of World of Warcraft. I mean, it's not bad.
This reminds me of a couple of years ago where they used a video game that was kind of like Betty Bad, and it was about a kid fighting cancer inside of their own body.
Oh, really? So kind of similar thing.
You've never heard of that?
No.
Oh, well, that's surprising. Yeah, it was a game where. I guess it was like a secret agent or whatever. It was like a female lead, goes inside the body a la, like. Injection or something and fights the cancer with laser beams. Which, I mean, what better way to get a kid amped up about fighting their cancer than having them literally kill it?
Yeah, that's really cool, actually. So this is just an interesting way to kind of use collectible card games in a different way. So I have a link in the show notes if you want to check that out. He also wondered when I talked about Deathless Angel why people got so mad at me is I used the word obese. And that's just because that is kind of the clinical term for it, depending on what your BMI is. And he's just wondering if that was one of the reasons people got so mad at me.
Would you folks prefer a cute face and chubby waist?
I don't know. And he also, he's relating this to going on to residency, but he wanted to know if people who are pro players or kind of tourney players, and we'll have Connolly get his response next week, he's working tonight, is if you are kind of making that step to the maybe having a kid or going to a stressful job or something or more training, is it possible to continue to be a big competitive player? I kind of said that maybe you need to sort of change your viewpoint, because Conley had a good point a couple episodes ago saying where he kind of questioned people who said that they wanted to really be a competitive player, but their goal was not to win the Pro Tour. In his mind, he said, well, if you're going to play competitively, you should be aiming to win the Pro Tour, because that's kind of his goal.
Didn't we recently have a pro player just make a major comeback? We covered it in last week's show, I believe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
King of Fatties?
Wakefield. But yeah, so I was just curious for, I guess it to me would be your definition of competitive. I think you could still get the competitive flavor by playing in your F&Ms just to have the competitive flavor to that. But I think it is going to be hard to play at the Pro Tour level where you're going to have to be traveling for tournaments on a regular basis.
Well, you got to have that ambition. And, you know, Wakeman seems like he does, which I was actually really excited to read that blog post by him. It seems like he's bound and determined to get that title belt.
So it was just, I want to hear people's feedback. And maybe if you had this happen to you and you had to make a change in how you play Magic, let us know. His example is residency, but family, whatever it was, give us some feedback. We also have Drew recommends a movie called Dance of the Dead. Ben, he said he got to live the dream during his Rise of the Eldrazi release, where he had double gelatinous Genesis in his seal pool. So there were oozes of plenty in almost every game, with the average being getting 4/4/4s. Which is, I mean, probably pretty common. That's 9 mana, which is happening a lot in these games. And he also points out, as we poo-pooed this card, this is Gigantomancer. But I think this was before I actually played the format and realized how little removal there is. Where he said this guy actually turned out to be pretty much a house, where people did not want to try to kill him, because they want to save their limited removal for other creatures. So this guy would become a monster in the end of the game.
And now we all feel very silly.
Yes. So there we go. And David S., who gets a warm fuzzies in my heart, he told me that MTG Cast needs to get a favicon or a favicon. Like, when you open up the website, they get the little icon next to the URL. You know what I'm talking about? Like, the little image that shows up?
Oh, yeah. I think I know what you're talking about.
So I want to say, that's good feedback. We have one now. And he also appreciates my defense of North Dakota, because he's from Jamestown, which is the home of the world's largest buffalo. And also White Cloud, the albino buffalo. I promised David, next time I go through to be visiting family in North Dakota and Montana, I will stop by and play some games in Jamestown. Because we need to support the North Dakota Magic scene.
Also, if you're supporting us, we're going to support you.
Exactly. You know, scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Or wherever else you want to scratch, due to where the spider bit.
Oh.
Depends if I got my waistband. Because that's the thing, I've had Lyme disease twice, and both times the damn things have bitten me where my waistband is, because they get in your waistband and they get angry because they're trapped and they bite you.
Oh, Tom. I feel sorry for you, man. Yeah, I think the scariest thing I've had happen to me was I've had ticks where I really did not want ticks.
Yeah, it's kind of like leeches if you ever went swimming in like leech things where you can get leeches. Anyway, unless you're wearing a saran wrap around your you're going to get leeches on everything.
I know exactly what you're talking about because if anybody lives near the Second Broad River in North Carolina, you cannot go swimming in that like at all without just being
double-headed leeches.
Chemicals. Oh, God, a three-eyed fish. Kulu.
Let's see. Next, Javid A, he writes in about a Rise of the Eldrazi pack oddity. He went 3-1 and sealed at his pre-release, but he got this one pack. He says it was completely normal. He sent a picture of this, except for one of the cards was flipped upside down, so backwards in the pack. And It was just a common shared discovery. Peter said this reminded him of when he got a pack and guild pack with 4 rares and no commons. And usually we hear stories about oddities and pack collation, and we haven't heard much yet for Rise of the Eldrazi packs. So just throwing it out there for people. So if you've had a weird pack, let us know. Let's see. Joseph from North Carolina also writes in about the depiction of race in Mirage, because I forgot about the Mirage set in general, and that Wizard of the Coast does listen to the podcast. And I said, hell yes, they do. And my
oozes. We're awesome. Why wouldn't they listen to us?
Wolfgang recommends checking out the Porky's movies. I have not seen a Porky's movie in a long, long time.
Remember the bit about the sketch artist there, Tom?
In Porky's? It's been too long. I don't remember anything about Porky's anymore.
They were going to bring in a sketch artist to identify the penis of the offending guy, remember? And they were going to write on the wanted poster, has anybody seen this prick? Oh, it has been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, so that one we'll be put on my Netflix queue to kind of refill the... That's kind of the movie you want to watch when you're like 12, just to see the dirty parts. I mean, that's like the only reason you would watch Porky's or any of those movies.
That was awfully hyped when I was a prepubescent adolescent boy, I do suppose.
Let's see, next we have Will B. He sends in just two atrocious movies for recommendations, one of which I've seen. The first I haven't seen is a movie called Hanger. It's hard for me to... I can't even, obviously we swear a little bit on this show. This one I can't describe because it's a little too dirty. But basically it's about a guy using... Okay, we'll just say it. The main plot, so people skip forward for about 15 seconds.
This can't be any worse than Human Centipede from a few weeks back where they defecate in each other's mouths, man.
No, I just want to say this is just, if you're sensitive stomach, skip ahead. Main plot, skip ahead 10 seconds starting right now. Main plot, an aborted baby survives and seeks bloody revenge on his mother's killer. And the name of the movie is Hanger.
Huh.
I have a link in the show notes. It has a very funny tagline of "Payback is a bitch of a whore." And yeah, if you look at some of these screenshots from the movie, there's this one where there's this lady like in a lingerie, and this is this guy holding a bent hanger at her.
Oh, come on! Oh,
but it's not even threatening. It just looks stupid.
Oh, Tom, why are we laughing?
I feel bad, but that's what it is. The other movie mentioned was a movie actually called. It was an independent film called Teeth.
Oh, this is the movie that makes you uncomfortable to be male. I remember those.
Yes, this is the movie about, I guess, dentata. Basically,
vagina dentata.
Basically about a woman who has teeth in her vagina. There you go. I've never heard of this happening, but there you go.
Yeah.
All right. I just feel uncomfortable now. Like I said, I'll make sure I share our emails that we get. Luke S., he actually played in the Bangkok Rise of the Eldrazi pre-release, and he said he agreed with the overall assessment that Blue White, Blue Red, a Black Bull, and Distortion Strike were very strong cards. His discussion of this new format, almost the new extended with the cutoff at Mercadian Mass, he says this is totally a business decision. He brings up a really good point, though, that he feels that this actually is an overall very positive thing, because for players in foreign markets, this is really good because they just don't have access to those older cards. They have to either use Chinese or English cards. So he thinks this is a really positive thing. And I never thought about it from the foreign Magic market perspective.
Well, I mean, it's obvious that they're trying to work it where you're going to have a format that's healthy and is basically for people who can't access things like Black Lotus and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm actually hyped a little bit about this new format. I want to see what it's going to turn out to be.
And I agree. I mean, most of the hosts here were from the United States. We have a pretty geographic-centric view of what Magic is here, but we have to remember, Magic came out here first, so we theoretically have access to all the cards. Well, it is more difficult, much more expensive in places where Magic came out later. So
right.
Let's see. And he also has, if you want to email us any recommendations for cheap decks for FNM Standard. I guess what Red Deck Wins is probably overall a fairly inexpensive one.
Yeah, because usually the cards in that don't change very often. I mean, get some mountains, maybe a couple of Tectonic Edges if you want to be techie, and just roll with it, man.
Yeah, so I'd say that'd probably be my idea for a cheap FNM deck.
Red-Black Aggro might not be too bad. I've actually played that a few times, and it's a lot of fun.
That's a good point. Do you play it with the one black guys that they're, 13-13s that get -1/-1 for each of your life points?
No. I don't hate myself like that.
Oh, those are fun. I play black-red aggro with those and ad nauseum, which can be just sometimes be a fun deck.
That actually does sound pretty cool.
Which is crazy draw. Sometimes you can draw, because most of your cards are basically 1 to 2 casting cost, besides the ad nauseum, so usually you can draw a boatload. And you get yourself down to like 4 life, and then you have these 11-11 monsters or 10-10 monsters.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Actually, the way I handle it is a little bit different. I do a much more disruptive route, like you'd go turn 1 Inquisition of Kozilek, turn 2 Hellspark Elemental, turn 3 Blightning, turn 4 Goblin Ruin Blaster, Grim Discovery, get back Tectonic Edge, and Goblin Ruin Blaster out of the graveyard. It's a little bit more fun.
You're more mean, I think.
Yeah, it's a lot more effective against control decks, but mid-range and aggro just tear me apart, so I quit playing it after a while.
But you're right. But overall, that would also be fairly affordable.
Right.
Let's see. Vince writes in about his example from his pre-release of Kozilek and Keening Stone. So basically, we were talking about Keening Stone being a real house in Limited. But he brings up a really good valid point that if you read the Legendary Eldrazi, is that those cards are one-card answers to any sort of mill strategy.
So you sit there and just let the game roll on. Definitely.
Yeah, they get milled, you get everything back. He's just like, he didn't realize it until that happened during a game. He's like, hey, you get your graveyard. He's like, I get my graveyard back. And the person's like, what? Shows him Kozilek. They're just like, oh. So he just wanted to let us know that there's three mythic hosers out there for beating Keening Stone. And it's also new because, like you said, you beat it just by having it in your deck. Like, if you have your hand, you're out of work, but you're out of luck. But if it's in your deck, there you go. It's like a Gale.
Oh, it's so much more aggravating than Feldon's Cane. So much more aggravating.
Simon in Taiwan, he sent in, he had a really good email about he enjoys the show and he had a fun pre-release experience. So he ended up, he had a Masticore and Magma combo, where basically he was stealing creatures with a conquering Masticore, then sacrificed them with Magma. He said he never thought he would ever have enough mana to be doing both of these things at the same time, but in Rise of the Eldrazi Limited, where you have three packs of ROE, it's overall a slower format where you can actually pull off these kind of crazy combos.
Cool.
He said the real money shot was when a guy across him played a Kozilek, he then stole it with a Conquering Masticore, hit him with it, and then sacrificed it with his Magma.
Oh, ouch. That just hurts.
And then Marcel just wanted to kind of second the opinion that, yes, the Mythic Eldrazi really do Fubar Mill. Let's see, Josh S. just wants to let us know about our discussion of the kosher burrito from last week, that if you mix meat and cheese, it ain't kosher. That burrito is a lie. And I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Let's see, Sean wants to let us know that the best artwork of all time on an angel with six wings is Admonition Angel.
I can almost entirely agree with that. The art on that is beautiful. Have you seen it?
Actually, I was just going to pull it up here because I got, you know, three bajillion links.
I realized the foil one was $15, I was eyeing this in the case up at our store forever. Oh, man, it's so hot, just normal, and then you foil it. Oh.
That is pretty, because it's kind of got the white and black sort of kind of landfall look to it. Yeah, it is very nice.
The lighting and everything on it is just perfect. I mean, the artist is great. I think Chippy did it.
Only reason I know is I have it up right now. It's Steve Argyle.
Ah, okay.
I will never pretend to correct somebody on things like artists. I'm like, I don't know. Unless it's like Mark Tieden. Let's see. Dave L., he says he's been playing casual Magic for a little while now, and he's thinking about testing the waters to get into FNM. So he's just wondering how competitive he can be at these. Says he can't afford decks with four Jace the Mind Sculptors or full sets of Baneslayer Angels. Is this one, will this limit my success? Is it possible for me to still be competitive? The reason he's asking is he has to drive about half an hour to get to these tournaments. This is kind of FNM standard budget. We mentioned this before. FNM standard budget, is it worthwhile trying to do that and play in an FNM? I would say yes. Classically, this should hopefully be overall a less competitive format where people are playing more, I guess, roguish decks. And should be a time for you to test out kind of your own motley rogue creation that you have.
Well, I will say this. In my experience, FNM, it really depends on your meta. The store I used to frequent had a very, cutthroat metagame, and everybody was using world-class decks and blah, 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 blah. Well, then that crowd kind of left because it just wasn't fun anymore, so nobody was showing up except those guys.
Well, I think you told us about this, that you boycotted almost, right?
Yeah. What happened was we had an instance where FNM was originally just, about 20 of us getting together, and we would all have a good time. Oh, man, this story is so old. And we had a couple of guys, and one or two of them were actually really good dudes. I got to know them afterwards, but they were kind of jerks. They were just horrible, horrible guys, and they all had that dream of being pro players, but they were going about it in completely the wrong way by being very unsportsmanlike. They would get together and see who was playing what, and then, John would play this deck, and he would know Ted would have a bad matchup versus him, but it would be okay because they would just draw if they got to top.
Okay.
They were basically taking the Mr. Suitcase approach to it, but with less neutrality and more lawful evil.
Oh, lovely, yeah. Nice.
So we got tired of it, and a bunch of us came in one day, and we were wearing identical T-shirts, and we just played them stone-faced the entire time. And they got so fed up with it because they used to trash talk us the entire time. And when you don't feed the troll that classic rule, the troll kind of dies. Yeah, the trolls died.
Oh, okay, good point. Yeah, you instead of fire, you just didn't talk to them.
Yeah, we instead of just throwing arsenic on them, we just stopped.
Let's see.
And we announced everything we did in the game. I remember that. That was funny. I will go to Tap My Island. I will now play this spell.
God.
The title of this spell is blah. It is an instant. This is what the spell says in the text box every single game.
Here's the Oracle text for the text boxes. It may be different. It may not be different, but let me recite the Oracle text anyways for your listening pleasure and gameplay enjoyment.
Oh, it was a great strategy.
So, Dave L., you kind of heard us mention some of the budget decks. If other listeners have ideas, let us know, and we'll be happy to mention those. Because I think especially if you're a new player to FNM, it's kind of nice to have a basis to start from. Because I think it could be discouraging where if you really did go with your, quote, pet deck, if you just totally get stomped, that can really put a damper on that. You want to at least feel like you had a competitive possibility.
Well,
if you're going
0-4
and getting stopped, you don't, I mean, that's not cool.
I would advise Dave to kind of poke around on MTG Salvation and a couple of other places. There really are some great roguish decks out there that, I mean, okay, they have a bad matchup versus Jund, I'll be blunt. But guess what? Everything has a bad matchup versus Jund. But the decks perform admirably elsewhere, and they're certainly worth a nod. Competitive players don't want to look at those decks simply because, as I just stated, they don't do great against Jund, but they do fine versus everything else. If you don't want to be the most competitive player and you just want to have fun at FNM, look at these decks.
You bring up a good point, too, where I guess, you know, if you're really trying to go for competitiveness, you probably don't care how fun the deck is to play, but I think for a lot of people, that is important. You want to enjoy playing of the deck. You know, if you're truly, playing to win, you're going to play whatever deck's best, even if that deck bores you to tears, but you're going to play
right.
What's best.
Right. I have a friend of mine that's playing Time Sieve right now simply because for him, it wins. Personally, I hate that deck because
it's
so
painful. Yeah, it's just
painful. Oh, God.
Just
and
boring,
like,
yeah.
For me, Tom, like, I'm not the best player, and I'll be the first to say that. So I kind of like decks where if I screw up a little bit, like, I can recover from that, which is one reason I liked Rune Flare Trap so much. Time Sieve, it's totally unforgiving. You have to play everything in the proper order and make the exact right judgment call, or that deck just doesn't go off. I don't like this kind of decks. That doesn't appeal to me.
And it's interesting where some people, like you said, that's really what they like, though. They like these precision oil machine that is this deck, where it's more, almost like more like an algorithm than a magic deck.
I'm just not that anal.
So there you go, Dave. We just want to give you some ideas. James from Protection from Noob Podcast, he recommends checking out the B-movie Monster Arc. And I'll have a YouTube link, and he offers a drinking game of taking a shot whenever you see a continuity error or an Indiana Jones reference, which I thought was pretty funny. Regan C. recommends Six String Samurai, a post-apocalyptic present where the king, Elvis, has died and everyone is trying to take his place. The protagonist is a guitar sword-slinging hero in a Buddy Holly look-alike form.
Ooh!
Why
does that appeal to me?
I saw this. I mean, I think it's probably been around since probably the late '80s. I guess I remember seeing this box at my local video store when I was getting two movies a week. You know,
and you're kind of like, hey, that movie looks terrible. That appeals.
Yeah, and
to
I just always it looked interesting because you see this back, and he kind of has like a guitar slung on his back, kind of like a samurai. You're like, that's interesting, but I'm going to get Ticks instead. So I just never actually got that movie. Let's see. Eric P. He sends in a question about which fan created or casual format would you like to see officially sanctioned by Wizards and turned into a pro tour staple? He just an example. He mentions Emperor EDH is kind of on that path. Five color mini master. I'm not aware of plane chase cube drafting. Which I don't know how you would do that, but God, that would be interesting. Some sort of like officially sanctioned cube for like a pro tour format. That would just be awesome. That would be amazing.
Crazy. Maybe like Wizards could supply the cards and
yeah,
people
like,
would just supply
like
the list.
Like a set like rotation of cubes or something, so you couldn't memorize a cube, but at least it made it somehow comparable. I don't know. That I thought was in my mind, I'm like, huh.
That would definitely be cool, yeah.
And he also mentions we also have this upcoming Arch Enemy as potentially another format. He also mentions a movie called Night of the Comet. A comet wipes out almost all life on Earth except for a few survivors who happen to have spent the duration of the comet's exposure to Earth being inside steel-lined rooms. And then these other people that were only partially shielded were turned into zombies. So, another... People love apparently B-movies. There's yet another recommendation for you.
Yeah, this has been a very popular addition to the show, I've noticed.
Jack, that is all of my emails. Well, if you didn't get yours read, it'll be on next week. I'll hand it off to you.
Oh, yeah, okay. My email. I really got a lot of email regarding, we've already addressed this at the start of the podcast. I don't know if Tom will edit that in or not.
Yeah, no, we were just going to start with I was going to edit that part out, so kind of discuss.
All right, I'm just going to go ahead and get this out of the way. Last time I was on the podcast, when we were discussing the issue of race and magic, me and Tom both used the term African-American. Now, true to my word, I responded to every piece of hate mail I got regarding this. And I'm just going to go ahead and address it here on the note that I may get some more in the future. When I used the term African-American, yes, I was fully aware that there is no Africa nor any America in Dominaria. I used it because Magic is an extremely diverse card game. I've met a lot of interesting and fantastical people through this game, and I hate to offend people, which is why I used the term African-American. It was the most politically correct thing I could think of at the time, and I do apologize if I offended anybody, because that certainly was not my intent, nor was it Tom's.
So we appreciate the feedback. Like you said, it was a choice of words. I'm going to let it go from there.
Yeah.
Stop. Any other emails you want to respond to?
Let's see here. I had somebody write into me about earlier about how they were basically vying for times that you've ever ruined Flare Trap, and as I've already said, he wrote me back and basically gave the same concept behind it that I did. Time Sieve is kind of unforgiving. It's good. It performs admirably, but it's just, it's not the most fun deck. You have to do everything right. Let's see what else I got. I actually had a listener contact me to work on their laptop, which I thought was awfully cool.
That's what you told me about.
Yeah. Like, Tom, I'm actually getting work through the podcast now. It's paying off. Woo!
Well, and my question is, how many bags of teeth can you fit inside a laptop case? That's my question.
I've seen people hide their weed in it, actually. They, like, stored a dime bag. You know how some laptops were made where you could put two hard drives in them and run them RAID, right?
Oh, that was a long time ago, though.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It was a while back, but the guy had removed the panel, flattened the dime bag, put it right there where the hard drive was, and then closed the panel. It was ingenious.
Well done, sir. Well done. It's like a MacGyver for weed.
Let's see. Do I have anything else? I had a lot of people write in and tell me that they were exhilarated when I mentioned Let the Right One In.
Yeah, people really like that recommendation. Right.
It's a beautiful movie. I can't believe you haven't watched it yet. Or have you?
Not yet. I mentioned I watched You're the Hunter of the Future. I also watched the movie Street Fighter and also Mortal Kombat.
Tom, that's twice in one podcast. You've disappointed me. Yeah. I'm seriously disturbed by your lack of, like, loyalty.
Street Fighter is one of the worst movies I have ever seen.
God, that movie's terrible. And they're making a Chun-Li movie.
Let's find out where Shanda LaDue and Mem Bison's creating a shopping mall that's going to destroy the world. Shoot me in the nuts. Like, this movie is atrocious.
I'll actually go ahead and mention it. This movie is being remade in America by the same guy that I believe made Kick-Ass, which was also a pretty decent movie. But it's going to be called Let Me In, which that's kind of a dumbing down of the title and has me a little concerned, but hopefully the same heartfelt story will be translated into the American version. What else have I been contacted about? Hate mail. Allow me to reiterate that I have the formspring.me Jack from NC account that I would love people to send questions to, and I believe that's it, actually.
All right, well, we'll go right to our... Of course, we'd love to get the emails again. We'll say them again. pitimp@mtgcast.com and then jack@mtgcast.com.
And don't forget, yet again, formspring.me/Jack from NC. Not Jack from North Carolina, but that's what it stands for. You get it.
So we have the new drinking game. Every time Jack tries to pimp his mind spring thing, take a shot.
Every time Jack stumbles over something in the podcast and Tom has to edit it out for him, like I just did.
Get C straight. So for MTGcast news, pretty slow this week. Thank you to everybody who responded. I got the addresses for the winners in record time. I'm getting the booster box this week along with the mailers. They'll be going out soon. So your packs are on their way. And last but not least is we want to say congrats to the Joes of the Yo MTG Taps, as they were mentioned prominently on the latest Serious Fun article on the Mothership Wizard site. This is by the Adam Stiborski, and it's called Gogo Eldrazi. He actually went to play the pre-release where the Joes play, and he met with them, asked their thoughts about the set itself. There's a nice Yo MTG Taps logo, a link to their show. And I love to see when MTG Cast show, or started here, kind of come on to do their own thing. They have their own website now that's iwantmymtg.com. Kind of like I Want My MTV, which I thought was pretty good.
And that's kind of winning.
Yeah, so I just want to say congrats. I like to see when people are, and they have a good show, so I love to see people be acknowledged for that.
Yeah, we definitely like seeing people who have started on our network getting pimped elsewhere. Because me and Tom are great big pimps.
We are. Did I tell you I actually got asked once if I was a pimp? Like in real life?
Like, seriously? Or?
Yeah, so a man thought I was a pimp. And this was in...
Well, you know, after that Jonas Brother image you sent us weeks ago, I can't say I blame him. You got the Mac Daddy appearance.
Great. I can't imagine the person working at Shutterfly that had to cut that picture of me out and put it into a poster and not be like, this is sick.
They probably go home and cry themselves to sleep at night.
But no, this was... Holly's here now. This is when I was asked if I was a pimp.
Ooh.
So this is actually when I first met Holly. It was as a way to get, like, experience for applying to medical school. You had to do, like, medical things or... volunteer in the hospital. That wasn't my thing. I was too lazy to do that. Polly basically forced me and said, hey, Tom, you need volunteer stuff. You need to show up to this class where you can learn to be a volunteer to give a talk on contraception to women who are going to the university healthcare clinic to get birth control for the first time. Holly forgot to mention that I was the only guy. that I was going to be participating in this. So it was like 20, maybe 20 women and me, 15, 10.
It sounds like when I took social dance
in that room when I went in there. There's 1,000 women in that room. There's 1,000. We're arguing. I'm saying 1,000. She's saying 5.
1,000.
So a lot of, we'll say a lot of women. So eventually we...
They were all after Tom.
No. I taught this class. We learned to give this talk. I was the only guy. So every form of birth control had the con of requires male participation, which sounded really funny coming out of my mouth. Unfortunately, a con to this method is it requires male participation because they're all scumbags. But eventually we took a field trip to a couple of the various sex shops in Minneapolis. One called, what was it? There's Lickety Split. What's the other one? Sex World, thank you.
Wait. So, Tom, what class was this, and where can I apply?
What? Do you remember what the name of the class was? God, it's blowing my mind. Contraceptive Peer Education Program. You could take it for credit or for volunteer. I took it as volunteer.
Wow.
And so part of this field trip was me and a group of women, we'll say, and then an older woman who taught the class. And a man came up to me in Sex World and thought I was the pimp and she was the madam, and this was my string of women.
Well, what'd you answer, Tom?
I was just kind of shocked. Well, I was already shocked because I had seen titles like Itty-Itty Bang Bang and Little Richard's Big Package and found out why you shouldn't eat the popcorn in the video room, and I was just kind of in shock after this, but yeah.
Wow. That's much better than my psych class I was taking this year, and I was one of 3 men in the class out of a class of 40. And the first night we were there, our teacher got up in front of the class and said, "Okay, girls, let's talk about all the things that are wrong with men," because she was doing it as an example of stereotyping. I didn't open my mouth when it came our turn.
So, Jack, we're gonna wrap this one up. It's been a marathon. I'm gonna save my B-movie recommendation for next week because I know you have a few that you want to run through.
Right.
So I'm curious about the second one on this list. We've already mentioned one. You can't say you've already said that one, the first one.
No. Well, I mentioned that after the show there. So that was our some of our little banter we had afterwards.
Go for it.
Okay, so it's my turn, I take it?
Yep, you got the talking stick.
This is my ultra way better than Tom's recommendation, because it
That's
always is.
That's actually what it says on the show notes.
I didn't write that in. I opened them up and they were there. So, anyways, everybody seemed to really enjoy Let the Right One In. So I'm going to try another kind of off-the-wall film. And I'm going to say Hard Candy this week, which what this movie's about is a man meets up with a young girl and agrees to take him back to his apartment and gets a major twist.
Oh, right. So the reason we talk about this is you emailed me about it and I mentioned Hard Candy last episode. That's why I'm having deja vu.
Oh, Tom, you stole the rug out from under me.
Well, you said to mention it on the show.
No,
so I did.
Even if I gave you permission to do that, that's villainous.
Yep.
That's villainous of you, sir.
Keep moving.
All right. Well, my other recommendation is a lot of people seem to like music, and I'm pretty good when it comes to picking out weird things with tunes, so I'm going to recommend that every one of you go home and listen to Slugbait Part 1-3 by a band called Throbbing Gristle. Now, it's industrial music, and I apologize if you don't like that, but it's certainly worth a listen, especially if you like creepy stuff. Now, it's not for the faint of heart, but lend your ear to it a little bit, won't you?
It's called Throbbing Gristle is the name of the band?
Yeah, Throbbing Gristle.
They're like, actually, that should not be seen by children, I'm guessing?
No. This is it's a old UK industrial band. They're actually believed to be the pioneers in industrial music because they were the first to like use bottles and stuff on stage to generate different sounds. And Slugbait, it's so distorted that you can't really make out any of the words except for part 3, but it's definitely something people under 18 should not listen to, I guess would be the best way of saying it.
We weren't sure this was the name of like Madonna's new band or something. Or that'd be Aging Gristle, I guess. That'd be the better name for it. It'd be Aging Gristle.
Or Downward Spiral. Oh, that works too. But no, actually, this is a really cool band, and I just discovered them recently. So give them a listen, folks.
And just to, I have to offset Jack. Well, we will have a quick one here. My recommendation is Basket Case from 1982. So this is a movie about Dwayne Bradley. Basically, he was born with a Siamese twin, which really looked like just like a... It was like a basketball sewed to his stomach, and it had like arms and a little face on it. And he had it surgically removed, but it stayed alive. And then kind of keeps living with this removed Siamese twin, but it's so like angry about its deformity that it just kills people. And this is a very poorly done B-movie where it really looks like a basketball with like 2 little arms like taped to it, and they just like throw it at people. That's the attack.
Oh, that sounds absolutely horrid.
Yes. Yeah, it's just you just kind of watch this thing that this deformed Siamese twin is like a sociopathic, homicidal maniac. It has no like obvious lungs, heart, or like stomach, But then it can just like leap up. It has like a vertical more than like most NBA players. You're just like, what is going on in this movie?
Oh God, gravity's attacking me. Oh.
And it was so popular, it actually had two sequels, Basket Case 2 and 3. And in one of those, he actually finds a female head Siamese twin that's been cut off, and they have sex. There's actually a sex scene between the two things, and they have a baby.
Thomas, most B movies are proven. You don't really have to be popular to get a sequel.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's all I got, Jack. I'm going to say we're at the end of the show, because usually this is where it goes downhill, so I'm just going to stop it.
All right. I'm done. I'm spent.
You're out of here.
Eric has taken all the oxygen out of us.
We all have to go use our shake weights to work out and just kind of get rid of the day's stress.
Yeah, I'm going to go home and pump iron all night long. Anyways, adios, folks.
All right. See you guys later.